Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now today, women make up about half our workforce. But they still make 77 cents for every dollar a man earns. That is wrong. And in 2014, it's an embarrassment. Women deserve equal pay for equal work.
State of the Union explainer number two. After that clip on Tuesday night, the president went on to say that these sorts of workplace policies belonged in an episode of Mad Men. In those days, women were more likely to be secretaries and advertising executives. But here, 50 years later, even when controlling for similarity in jobs, sectors, and education, women still trail their male counterparts. So how surprised should we be at this gap? And how close are we to closing it? And what exactly was he proposing there, if anything? Join me here in the studio is Betsy Reed, executive editor of The Nation. Betsy, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So equal pay for equal work. That's a very specific statement. How literally should we be taking what President Obama said?
Well, I mean, technically, by law, there is equal pay for equal work. There was an Equal Pay Act passed in 1963. And, you know, what Obama – but the devil's in the details. It's the question is, how do you actually achieve that in practice? And the real problem we're facing today is a lack of transparency about how much people are paid. Now, Obama likes to boast, rightly so, that the first law he ever signed was the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. And that was a big achievement in allowing women who felt their, you know, since they were victims of pay discrimination, even if it's well, they discovered this well after the fact, they could still sue. And Lilly Ledbetter herself fought a really long battle to win that victory. But the problem is that that because of pay secrecy, a lot of women are not aware of how they're being discriminated against, and it's incredibly difficult to make these cases in court. So there's something called the Paycheck Fairness Act, and that's been before Congress. It's reintroduced every year. It has 200 Democratic sponsors in the House, but of course, you know, the Republicans in the House don't like this.
It's a transparency bill.
Yes. Essentially, that's what it is.
Meaning it allows employees to see what their colleagues are making?
Right. Well, I mean, it prohibits employers from retaliating against employees who share information about their pay. So, you know, like a lot of good ideas, this is not going to go anywhere in the present configuration of Congress. However, Obama, you know, I really like that part of his speech first. I would like to say, I mean, I don't mean to be a downer about it. I thought it was one of the rhetorical high points of the speech. It polled incredibly well. People loved it.
And except for the shout out to the veteran at the end, it got the loudest and longest applause.
Right. And the Mad Men line was great. So, I mean, I welcome that rhetoric. The reality is, though, there are things that he could do that he has not done that would actually make a difference. And one is actually technically similar to what he's proposed to do on the minimum wage by increasing the minimum wage for federal employees of federal contractors. He could do the same thing for women. He could require that that no federal contractors retaliate against women for finding out how much they're being paid, for sharing information about being
uh-huh.
And that would apply to 22 million workers.
So he could issue an executive order that's a scaled back version of this transparency law that's stuck in Congress and apply it to those employers he has jurisdiction over, which are the contractors who get federal contracts.
Exactly.
And has anybody put that to him, and has he responded, or has the press secretary responded?
Well, I mean, he has a long list of things to do, right? And that's not one that he's done yet. But actually, Lilly Ledbetter herself made this point in a recent excellent op-ed for The Washington Post.
Listeners, if you are a woman in the workforce, have you struggled to get equal pay? Why has it been hard? Have you ever known or wondered if you were getting less pay than a man in the equivalent job in the same workplace? Would you have like to have known but maybe feared retaliation with this particular bill that Betsy Reed from The Nation is talking about do something for you or have done something for you or anything else you want to say about the pay equity issue, which President Obama at least spoke about in the State of the Union address, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Is there evidence yet that Lilly Ledbetter is making a difference, that that law is making a difference?
There's only modest evidence. The gap has not closed as much as we would hope that it would. And Lilly Ledbetter herself, you know, made that point in the piece that she wrote.
Because, again, the point of that law was to extend the length of time that women who later discovered that they were discriminated against with respect to pay could file a lawsuit, right?
Yes. The much larger problem that the 77 cent figure reflects is a problem that of occupational segregation and the way that female-dominated occupations tend to pay less. And that is also something that Obama could do something about. There are a whole host of what's called workforce development policies that the government, you know, pays for and structures. And through those policies, they could increase gender integration in professions like nursing and in construction, you know, and try to
more men to nursing, more women to construction.
Exactly. And then also there needs to be a raise given to a lot of the women in the care professions who are, you know, notoriously underpaid.
Let's take a phone call. Stephen in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Brian. Like I was telling the screener, I know this is kind of like the height of an un-PC, well, provocative comment to say, but I don't understand where is this pay inequality happening? I don't really buy it. I think it's some kind of old wives' tale that's allowed to live this long, but I mean, like the female reporters at WNYC who are on air, are they actually getting paid less than any male on-air reporter?
I would doubt very much that that's the case. but Betsy Reed, if he's skeptical that this is going on with respect to that, you know, narrow definition of what the president said, the literal definition, and what the transparency bill would require, that women in the exact same positions really are getting paid less than the men in the exact same positions and exact same backgrounds, et cetera, in the same companies. Do you have evidence that it's going on or that it's concentrated in certain sectors?
Okay, well, 2 points about that. One is there's not enough evidence because there's not enough public data out there because there's too much secrecy. So we do have a little problem in that. But, you know, the larger point is that the 77 cent figure refers to full-time year-round workers. And people have kind of nitpicked with that figure because they've said that men are actually working longer hours, women aren't working as much, women choose lower paid professions, all of that. And it is true that that the studies show that only 40% of that gap is a result of direct discrimination. So when you're looking at, you know, reporters or people straight out of school, college educations, there's about like a 10% differential between men and women. It's not that 23 cent difference. Mm-hmm. That 23 cent difference is something that reflects what I was talking about before, about gender segregation, the way women are tracked into different lower paying professions, and also the motherhood penalty, the fact that once women start having children, they take some time out of the workforce and then they pay a real financial penalty. And over their lifetimes, it amounts to hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And maybe Tamara in Brooklyn has another factor. Tamara, you're on WNYC. Hello.
I just wanted to add in the issue of negotiation, particularly for salaried employees, that as a woman, we're often not taught to ask for more money when we even start our job. So when you're getting increases or pay increases, we've already come in at $5,000, $6,000 lower than our male counterparts. I've seen it many times, particularly in higher ed, where I've worked, and people don't negotiate for the extra $5,000, $10,000 when they start a job. They're just happy to be employed. Because, oh, I'm a woman and I shouldn't ask for more money, or I'm a minority of any kind and I shouldn't ask for more money. Meanwhile, I've hired men who have no really limited skills then they'll be like, well, I think I should get $10,000 more because I have this, this, and this. And I'm like, really? So I think the training people to negotiate is really a key part of helping women have pay equity in the workplace.
Tamara, thank you very much. And before you answer, Betsy, I think Katrina in North Plainfield wants to make a related point. Katrina, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. I completely agree with that point and also wanted to note something else. Women, not only do we not ask for it, but when we do, the perception is that we're being greedy. You know, it's not a similarly positive perception as with men. And I would say as an African-American woman, I think the same goes for African-American women. And to the caller before who said that he didn't buy it, there are corporations all over the world that do these studies. They don't publish them because they're embarrassing, but I'm an employment lawyer and have been one for 17 years, and I can tell you that every time corporations do these studies internally, they show this disparity, and it's in similar percentages. So, you know, the 77% percent to the dollar number is quite true, and corporations could tell you that.
Do you have an impression, Katrina, or experience from your practice about which kinds of sectors it tends to concentrate in, if there are?
I'm an attorney. I can tell you that it happens within law practices, law offices, and law departments of corporations. But I've also seen these studies and reports. And so within corporate America, I absolutely see that this is the case across the board. So whether you're a professional accountant or whether you work in the machine room, these numbers are going to be similar. Sometimes they're much higher, sometimes they're lower. But even when you assume that, okay, well, women are doing a different kind of job, even when you take that out of the equation and simply look at job for job, the disparity is still there.
Betsy Reed?
And one other quick point I just wanted to make. Don't the National Labor Relations Act rules, not the ones relating to unions, but related to concerted activity, address this retaliation issue that you were discussing earlier? In other words, we already have laws on the books that prevent employers from punishing employees for discussing their pay rates among them. That's considered concerted activity, I thought. And so I would love to know if the person on the line speaking with you is aware of those rules.
That person on the line actually in our studio is Betsy Reed, executive editor of The Nation. Betsy?
Yes,
well,
Ms. Reed.
Those are some many excellent points there. I really do agree that it's a problem that women tend to sort of undersell themselves and not ask for enough in salary negotiations. That's why I welcomed Sheryl Sandberg's book and her wisdom in Lean In. I think that if you overemphasize that, though, it lets employers off the hook to some degree because there is a certain amount of wage discrimination that employers are guilty of. So it's not, you can't blame women for asking for less. But I would just tell one story from my own experience, which, you know, was really eye-opening. I was conducting a hire, and I got two resumes that were, I'm telling you, they were virtually identical. These candidates had worked for the same employer. They had the same job and the same amount of experience. And the man asked for double the salary, twice as much. I couldn't believe it. And in my own experience, that happens very frequently. So I think we as women, as feminists, really do need to encourage each other to ask for what we deserve.
Katrina, thank you so much. So that's cultural change. That can't be legislated, right?
Right. But what you can do is force employers to be fair. I mean, as a fair employer, I would never have paid the man twice as much. We would never have done that. So I think and that should be a legal obligation.
Victor in Bridgewater, you're on WNYC. Victor, turn your radio off.
Yes.
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, but turn your radio off because you're going to hear the delay and then everybody's going to hear the delay and it's going to be so annoying.
For taking my call, I have a comment regarding Fairness Act that is stuck in Congress right now.
Yes.
My comment is, welcome to the Soviet Union. I'm from the former communist country, and we had that fairness, so-called fairness, ultimate fairness, when every year employer posted salaries on walls of your office, everybody to see. And all it caused is envy and troubles, and people look at each other very well. You can understand, very bad. So it was no such a progress. And that country, Soviet Union, had most fair salary system. Everybody was equal.
Of course, in the Soviet Union,
wasn't
the system...
Is it a historical lesson for us? Why we should do it?
Victor, wasn't the employment system in the Soviet Union that the workers pretended to work and the employers pretended to pay them?
Well, it was part of the system, correct? It was part of the system. Nevertheless, some people worked hard, some people didn't work. System did not have enough stimuli to really do great job.
And Victor, thank you very much. Please call us again. I'm going to leave it there and get a response. Betsy Reed, to the point of the Fairness Act, he was saying it just created envy and bad morale and problems when everybody's salaries were posted.
Well, I mean, I think the former Soviet Union is a very different social and political context to what we're confronting here today. And I think you see here in this country workplaces where that kind of information is more freely available. Unionized workplaces, you see, you know, less disparity in pay. And I don't think you see a greater amount of backbiting and envy. I think you see employees who are, you know, fairly compensated.
Last thing. A Pew survey released in December seemed to show that women born after 1980 earn 93 cents for every dollar a man earns, not 70-something. Is there hope that millennials are finally closing the gender pay gap?
I mean, the real thing is, you know, these people haven't had kids yet, right? So that's where you see, I mean, as I was saying before, you see a minor differential when people are just getting out of college. But then when women start having children, you see a much larger gap open up. And now that has to do with the time taken out of the workforce. It has to do with the greater number of hours that men work. And also it has to do with discrimination by employers against mothers.
Maybe the biggest thing is the behavior of men, and that if men stayed home and did as much childcare as women do and were doing the second shift as much as women do, which is hardly a new concept, that then that's the biggest thing that would get the wage disparity to equal out.
I think it would make a big difference. And then also men wouldn't be as available to work the 80 hours a week on Wall Street and to, you know, to rake in these huge paychecks.
Betsy Reed, executive editor of The Nation, with our explainer number two from the State of the Union address. We explained my RAs before. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next from the Brian Lehrer Show bookshelf, economist Paul Oyer with his new book, Everything I Ever Needed to Know About Economics, I Learned from Online Dating. Stay with us.